Can you state your full name for the record, please?
Neville Alexander Armstrong.
And you are appearing today in support of a submission filed by the Ida Valley Irrigation Company Limited?
Yes.
And that submission was dated the 4th of May 2020.
Yep.
You've also prepared a summary of the key points that you wish to present to the court relating to that submission, and a copy of those key points has been circulated?
Yep.
Do you confirm that the evidence that you are about to give is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Yes.
If you would now proceed with reading your summary and then remain for any questions.
Good afternoon, Your Honour and Commissioners. My name is Neville Armstrong. I'm a fourth generation farmer from the Poolburn area of the Ida Valley. I appreciate the opportunity to speak on behalf of the Ida Valley Irrigation Company Limited, known as IVIC, of which I am chairman, in regard to our submission on Plan Change 7. As background, IVIC was formed approximately 30 years ago when the assets of the company were transferred from the government. The assets were the infrastructure for the delivery of water, such as races, weirs and culverts in the Ida Valley, and two concrete arch dams at the Upper Manaburn and Poolburn reservoirs, together with associated weirs. The government had constructed the dams, the Manaburn Dam being construction being completed in 1914, and the Poolburn Dam, where construction was completed in 1931, together with the associated weirs, race and water delivery for infrastructure, a fair bit of which was put in during the 1930 depressions. The Ministry of Works operated the irrigation company infrastructure until IVIC took over. The company provides irrigation water to 49 shareholders. The two reservoirs are also well known and well used recreational fishing areas. The result of having the water takes as short-term permits means the company has difficulty to plan for and fund the maintenance and upgrade as required for the infrastructure of the irrigation system. The costs of maintenance and, if required, upgrades are significant, and the payment of water users or shareholders would likely be unable to raise sufficient funds for the water charge increases or shares required to fund these costs on short-term permits. The short-term permits do not give the company the ability to plan ahead with any certainty for dam maintenance, upkeep and dam safety. These sort of things require longer-term plans of 5 to 20 years. IVIC provides irrigation water to landowners and farmers in the Ida Valley and Galloway areas of Central Otago. We deliver to 49 shareholders who own land that is able to be provided with water from the storage dams. The shareholders represent a significant portion of the families that make up our community. The shareholders are reliant on the provision of water from the company for their financial viability. Approximately 26,690,000 cubic metres of water on average is provided each irrigation season, which is from September 1st to April 30th. The proposed Plan Change 7 policy requiring water permits for no more than 6 years does not enable the company, water users, the shareholders to invest to provide the water efficiency and environmental gains on farm. This is because water users are usually required to borrow such funds without long-term security of water. The ability to borrow is significantly reduced and possibly eliminated. The cost of infrastructure for the application of spray on farm normally runs into hundreds and thousands of dollars. There has already been a considerable number of shareholders who have in charge water applications on farm. To put things into a context, in my own case, in 2016 we invested in two centre pivots, which irrigate a land area of approximately 140 hectares. The cost of this development has required us to borrow up to $1.6 million. I don't believe we would have been able to secure funds without the security of water at that time, and it's certainly with no certainty of any length of future consents. IVIC relies on the provision of stored water for its users. The amount of water available for irrigation in any one season is set at the beginning of the season as a percentage of the total given the capacity of the dams at the time. The company are very concerned at the effect on the ability to fund major works in regards to the dam safety and infrastructure. Also, the cost of preparing applications for short-term consents under the proposed Plan Change 7 appears initially to be effectively the same as the cost of preparing applications for consents of longer durations, up to 35 years. These costs also run into the hundreds of thousands of dollars. And again, the ability to fund such administration costs is severely impacting on the ability for water users to raise the funds. A catch-22 situation of no security of for water means bank lending is less able to be obtained, and work required to effect best practice and maintain upgrades of schemes cannot be completed. IVIC irrigation infrastructure is an interconnected system which all works together to capture and store water when it is most available, to provide a reliable supply of irrigation water during the irrigation season. This has benefits as it reduces the impact of abstraction during low flow periods of the year. Valuable recreational benefits are provided by the large reservoirs in the Poolburn and Upper Moonaburn dams. PC7 deals with the interconnected irrigation systems in a fractured manner. All water takes a few discharges and just weirs subject to PC7, which seeks to grant six-year permits. However, the Poolburn and Upper Manaburn dams, the Totra Creek, Bonanza and Dip Creek weirs, as well as has discharges from all of these structures and is not covered by PC7. This makes long-term planning for the required maintenance and upgrades of the whole integrated system extremely difficult, if not impossible. The uncertainty that it is created on the ongoing provision of water has created a very stressful environment for shareholders and the company. The community has relied on the provision of irrigation water for nearly 100 years.
Thank you. Questions?
Hey, good afternoon. I'm interested in the source of water for the irrigation scheme. Can you help me understand that?
The two different dams, the Poolburn Dam, there is a creek system from within that valley that runs down the Poolburn, but it doesn't yield a lot of water, and it is supplemented by other small creeks coming off Roughridge, North Roughridge. So we have got an agreement that we are able to take water at the Totara Creek over the winter months. And that Totara Creek would normally, if it followed its natural water course, flow down into the Styx Payrow area. But when it was all set up, they were so wet down there, they decide that an agreement was come to that we could grab the winter water and on that one. The Upper Menaburn, it's fed by creeks that actually end up, if they follow their natural water course, going out to Galloway. But with the, we put that, so the company got the rights to put up a weir, the Bonanza Weir, Upper Bonanza Weir, to lift the water about 7 metres to put it into a race system that can now go down and feed the valley floor, the Ida Valley floor.
Does the irrigation company hold the deemed permits or water permits with respect to the scheme?
Yes, yeah, they do.
And are those permits deemed permits?
Well, there's a mixture. Most of them are deemed permits, yes. Like I say, the main dams and the ones I mentioned are on a different permit.
And in relation to those permits, do any of them record priorities with respect to the use of the water resource?
Not that I'm aware of.
So it might be that they do, it might be that they don't. It's simply that you're not aware of them. And perhaps my question is, in your experience, no priorities have ever been exercised with respect to the water that the scheme takes?
No, not to my knowledge.
Now, you've noted in your summary that the irrigation company is concerned at the ability to fund major works in regard to dam safety and infrastructure. What, in terms of the current state of affairs, does the irrigation company levy its shareholders with respect to this type of maintenance and upgrade each and every year, or is that a future-looking issue?
We do. Obviously, the shareholders pay for the water, and it has usually been, you know, budgeted so that it covers what we need. But obviously, with two ageing and large dams, we are heading into territory where we're having to up the costs for them, and you know, in the rules and regulations that are coming in, it's, you know, becoming a much greater burden. So, well, could I say for the shareholders to come up with?
To date, what has the typical maintenance program looked like for each of those two dams?
Yes, and well, there is a program. Brendan Sheehan's going to be speaking in a couple of days. He's our engineer of note. He has written us up a program. Off the top of my head, I can't tell you the exact numbers of, you know, amounts spent, except it's in the hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I'll perhaps take that line of questioning up with Mr. Sheehan in,
yes,
in the fullness of time.
He's got given us a plan for the next 2 to 3 years out at the moment, and it's going, you know, going to be added on.
Okay, I'm interested in the investment in centre pivots that you've described in your statement this afternoon, back in 2016.
Yep.
So an investment in two centre pivots, that I understand that's occurred. The centre pivots are up and running?
Yeah, yes, we got them up and going at that earlier stage when we were able to fund it, yes.
And when you go on in your evidence to note that you wouldn't have been able to secure the funds without the water and with no certainty of length of future consents, cast your mind back to the time in 2016 when these decisions were being made. What were the water rights you were relying on at that point in time?
They're the same rights, but we were obviously hoping the rollover of time would be better, and banks at that stage were lending money because they believed that, you know, water rights would be a decent time period after.
Right. And when you think about the land that you have under irrigation, you'd be able to show that to me on a map.
Yeah.
presumably were dealing just centre pivot in terms of your operation?
Very small area of wild flood, about 10 hectares.
And when you think about the period of time, September 2017 to March 2020, you could be able to shade that maximum area irrigated on a map for me, if I had one for you?
For me, yes.
Yes. Yep. Thank you. Those are my questions.
Thank you. Dams themselves, the two dams, are being filled or filled by water under a dam permit or by a water under an RM permit, a resource management permit. Jen, do you know?
The dams, the main dams.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what that permit is actually.
Okay.
Fair.
I'm
assuming it would be a deem permit. I don't know that it's been turned over to a RMA.
You're talking there about Mataburn and Poolburn reserves.
The water coming into the mere, I'm presuming they're out of a...
Okay. Mr Sheenan should know.
Sorry?
Mr Sheenan, is he your consultant?
Yes.
And he's giving evidence next week in Dunedin.
Yes.
And he'll know the type of permit.
Yep.
Okay. Your page 3 of your evidence. And it's the third paragraph from the top. Well, second paragraph and third paragraph. You talk about PC7 dealing with the interconnected irrigation systems in a fractured manner. All takes, few discharges, and just wears are subject to PC7, which seeks to grant 6-year permits. Can you just expand that out a little in terms of what else is... in play and being dealt with presumably by another plan.
That's coming back to, the main dams. They are a water permitted thing, not a deem permit thing.
Is that right?
So we've got two, our infrastructure's got two.
Okay, tell me a bit more about that.
Different timelines. Well, it's just the way that it's fallen, some of it has come under PC7, I say, our smaller weirs mainly, which are in our distribution system, and some of our main dams and the Bonanza, Upper Bonanza weir that I was talking about, and that they're just a water permit. So yeah, it just makes it difficult because we've got just significant infrastructure under a different consent time frame.
Okay, so I understand it, and dams is something that's giving me concern in terms of how much evidence that we've received, and I don't think I've got a good enough understanding about dams and in general. So you've got two main dams. You've got the Upper Mataburn and you've got the Poolburn.
Yes.
And what type of permits do you reckon they are?
They're just covered by a water permit.
A water permit. Mm. And do you think that's an old mining permit?
I suspect it is.
You think it is, okay. But then at the paragraph, page 3, you go on to say, however, the Poolburn, Upper Mataburn, dams Totara Creek, Bonanza and Dip Creek weirs, as well as discharges from all of these structures, are not covered by PC7, which suggests they're probably regular resource management consents. Or if I misunderstood that, I'm quite possibly
I just know that it's under a different under a different water permit. That's all. The main dams are.
So you're not sure whether. Okay. All right. So have a word to Mr. Sheenan and say that I'm going to ask him questions. Right. I need to have a better understanding of those permits. Are they deemed permits, or are they just regular resource consents? You know, which could be for discharge permit, water permit, discharge permit, or water permit in particular, issued under the Resource Management Act. It has nothing to do with deemed permits or mining rights or anything else.
Okay.
Yeah, and I want to understand what that paragraph means, and I don't think I understand it yet. I think your concern is that you've got some consents which will be travelling under PC7 and some consents for a related structure which are travelling under the operative water plan, and so that's what you're telling me.
Yeah.
And I want to have a better understanding of which direction, what assets are travelling under which plan, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Because if they are, then, you know, your next paragraph, which, you know, makes long-term planning difficult. I mean, I understand that comment. Yep. All right. Okay, so that was all that's my question, but it's a question for Mr. Sheenan. So you might, well, tell him that I want more detail than perhaps what's in his evidence at the moment. But, I really want to understand what it means on the ground. Yep. Okay, Commissioner, have you got any questions?
I just had one question, and that was in relation to your paragraph 11, where you were talking about the costs of preparing applications for short-term consents appearing initially to be effectively the same as if you're going for your 35 years. So I just wanted to understand that a little bit better. So if we assume, for just teasing this out a bit further, that there's a possibility of a controlled activity application because the controlled activity status is the operative and becomes operative in the water plan, and you were to go down that route, well, what do you think that might cost?
I don't know, to be fair. It's just the fact that it's, you know, usually it's been, you've paid the money to get your consents, and it's been a long term. You've had to, you know, to live with that and build up some funds to do the next one, whereas this one we can see being only 6 years is going to, you know, we're straight back into needing to, pay to have care consultants and what have you.
Beyond the 6 years, but in terms of the 6 year consents that you might be applying for, if the controlled activity status becomes operative and you decide to go down that route, I mean, the idea is that this is supposed to be a relatively simple process, and you'll probably have most of the information to hand.
Yes, well,
you'll be able to put it together.
We will be able to roll information over, yes.
Yeah, and put it into the regional council.
Yeah.
And would you expect on that basis that the regional council people would take a long time to deal with that? So that would be very costly, or...?
Based on what's been happening so far, but I suppose it's taken a long time to get to where we are now. Whereas we thought things could have been done earlier, but and the longer it went on, the more stuff we were having to get, information we were having to gather and pay for and get looked at. So,
I understand that, but if you've got a relatively simple process with clear information requirements and you put it into the regional council to deal with it, there's a few things they're going to have to do, but
that's just more its ongoing costs again, and we hopefully could have had it tidied up.
Okay, so it's not the controlled activity cost by itself, your point? But do you think there might be some capacity for the regional council to set perhaps a standard charge for a controlled activity so people know what it is that they're going into?
I don't know if I want to go there. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, well, we've flagged it. It's out there. that's another policy signal, isn't it, given how much cost that people have borne to date under two plans. So there you go. Right, we'll see where that goes. That's nothing I can impose. That's actually something that the council would need to come to the table. But here's a question, just coming off Commissioner's questions. You said just to Commissioner Edmonds, oh, it's an ongoing process. You know, you've got to provide more information and more information and more information to the regional council to support your applications. And you would have heard from the last witness, Gavin Hurley, he said the same as well. You know, you've got to provide more information and then you've got to actually negotiate with, in his case, I think, three parties. And then you couldn't get the application over the line. And so here's my question for you, because you seem well experienced in terms of dealing with the regional council and dealing with applications. Is part of the frustration, perhaps, because under the operative plan, if we're looking at that, because you've got to put your application in under both, there is not a strong signal as to the outcome for people like yourself engaged in damming and irrigation, or even farmers who are engaged in taking water off a stream. There is no outcome or a strong enough statement of this is the environment that we want in the operative plan. And so you're forever responding to the wish lists of other parties and responding to the wishes of different policy planners or resource, people on the resource consents team as you try to move towards an environment which is not articulated anywhere in any in the regional plan. Is that a comment? And so you're forever handing over pieces of information, yeah. If you just knew what the end goal was in a plan, then at least you could have your consultants and also have your expert farmers, because you're experts in farm systems, working to that goal because it's set out there in an objective or a series of objectives. Is that part of the problem, that you just don't know how high to jump, if I could put it that way?
Yes, I would say it is.
Yeah. That, I suspect, is the problem with the operative plan. It doesn't have clear policy. It does not have clear outcomes so that people know, what do I have to do to get the application over the line? And that's, and so people, farmers, are working really hard to put up a good, defendable application. But they're not working to any goal as such. Would that be fair?
I think that would be a fair comment, yes.
Okay. All right. Well, that was my question.
I have no questions, thank you.
All right. You tell Mr. Sheenan that I'm interested in what he has to say about those permits.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Anything arising? Okay, thank you. Okay. Mr. Martin. Mr. Martin?
Confirm that your full name is Graham Noel Martin.
I do.
And you have prepared a submission on Plan Change 7, and that submission is dated 4 May 2020.
I did.
And you've also prepared a brief of evidence with respect to Plan Change 7, and that brief of evidence is dated the 5th of February, it says 2020, but I suspect 2021.
Indeed. Cardiac intervention makes you lose time.
Are there any corrections that you wish to make to your statement of evidence?
Apart from that date correction, no.
Can you confirm that the evidence that you are about to give is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
I do.
Now, have you prepared a summary of the key points arising from your evidence and your submission?
I have.
And are you able to circulate that now?
Yes.
Take you 10 minutes to read?
Depends on how things go, Madam Chair, but I'll give it a go. I will pick out key points.
Well, it's just that otherwise we'll take 5 minutes out to read it to ourselves, that's all.
I am happy that 5 minutes is taken out, provided there's enough copies for people in the court to be able to look at it as well.
Unless you know what the key points are that you want to hit?
I can highlight a few key points.
All right. Now we'll just... It doesn't look like it's as in a technical document.
Yep.
So you should be all right. Yeah, I just have to be mindful that if we're hearing a lot of evidence for the first time, Mr. Moore might need time also to formulate questions if he has questions, and the court likewise. Okay. All right, we're in your hands. Over to you.
Okay, first of all, going back to my statement of evidence as to my background, I want to expand slightly on that by saying to the court that I have worked for 41 years associated with deemed permits and water use and water management in Otago under several pieces of legislation, starting with the Water and Soil Conservation Act, then into the Resource Management Act, but also in the juncture in the middle is the Irrigation Act. So I have a good deal of experience with the intricacies of deemed permits. In terms of the statement I've got today, I want to emphasise that it's the whole issue of PC7 is transitions, transitions, transitions. And transitions should be based on principles. And my concern is about that. I'm also conscious, Your Honour, that there is a difficult nexus between the Local Government Act and the Resource Management Act. And indeed, the very question that was raised with the previous submitter about fees is one such nexus, and fees cannot now be set until the next, after this decision of this court, until the ensuing annual plan by the Regional Council. Just quickly, an overview of my statement of overview. I've raised some important questions, as I see it, in justifying and notifying PC7. And these questions are questions of societal integrity. Does a Section 32 report need to meet all Resource Management Act stated requirements in a reasonably comprehensive, professional, and impartial manner? Is it sufficient for Council to rely on an unanalysed statement by Professor Skelton to Minister Parker as justification for creating and notifying PC7? Has deliberative consideration ever been given to Prof Skelton's comment to the Minister that, quote, an alternative to a statutory extension of the term of deemed permits, quote, would be by a Council plan change? Notably, for this point, in regard to time, process and resource difficulties within Council, which limitations were the very reason for the Skelton review, and also for that review's recommendation that deemed permit expiry be extended by statute. D, did Professor Skelton, the Minister or the Council give reasonable consideration to the mechanics, time span, resource and financial costs of the plan change process, the sufficient and necessary content of the plan change and its impact on all water interests? E, did the Minister or Ministry have any cogent justification for his recommendation to the OSC that a plan change, now known as PC7, be implemented? F, did the Minister's recommendation to the Council have, in law, any binding force or direction on the Council? Or could the recommendation ever only have been advisory and should have been treated as such by the Council and thus having little moment in the justification of PC7? G, is it ethical or necessary outcome in law that the costs and consequences of systemic water planning failures in Council decision-making over the 2014 to 2020 period be imposed on water users and water interests when users and interest groups repeatedly and formally expressed concern about the repeated Council failures to coherently implement the 2014 and 2017 MPSF provisions? H, should the public have been entitled to rely on work programmes and decisions of the council has made prior to the Minister's recommendation? One of the key things that I want to flag, and I won't go over everything, I wanted to had planned to cross-examine Mr. De Pelsmaker and Dr. Everett Hinks of the ORC in order to adduce a number of the issues and facts around the deficiencies of what I see as the deficiencies or the accuracy or the integrity of the Section 32 report. I was unable to do that, unfortunately, simply because I had to take some time out. Community engagement and consultation. All affected and interested public have a reasonable expectation that consultation on a plan change should be by appropriate means, appropriately inclusive and appropriately analysed and reported with fair and unbiased intent. A key purpose of the Section 32 report is to give public transparency to the process of developing, justifying and then notifying a plan. Part 2.1 of the Section 32 report refers to three elements of attempted public consultation. These are listed as an online survey, a public forum and a focus group. The 32 report omits all information on the nature and outcome of the online survey. This survey was poorly advertised, self-selecting, leading and unverifiable. So poor was the design of the survey that A, participants were unverifiable and could not retain a copy of the responses. B, the questions lacked context, so answering sequence of questions created substantive leading bias in the output. And C, the reported results show the design bias was suggested that the survey was abused by people who thought they could load the analysis to their way of thinking. A bit like Forest and Bird annual vote for the Bird of the Year. There was no control over who or what, no ability to verify who or what took part in that survey. I have table the survey, the ORC has it. But there are two charts in that survey which raise the points I've put up, and they can be shown, I believe, if the court would wish.
I don't find that it would be relevant to any decision that I would need to make in terms of viewing and taking a view on the adequacy of that survey report. So I decline to see it.
That I accept that, Your Honour. The Regional Council understands and knows this information. The Section 32 report omits to tell the genesis of the forum, and I've spoken somewhat about the forum in the statement. The forum, the chair, was to be a workshop. People were invited to present for 10 minutes and be open for questions. When we turned up, the then chair of the council commandeered the place. We moved into formal meeting. She applied forum rules and the standing orders, but disallowing any councillor questions. So there was no interaction. And that was an important process to give interaction with consent holders and interest groups. The then chair tried to resurrect that circumstance by writing to all the submitters, telling them they had been heard. In my case, she wrote to me explaining that I'd been heard and she'd read the evidence. The fact is, she had not read my evidence. I had not left it behind. It was prepared for an address that was not able to be given. And we had an exchange of emails. If those emails are not able to be put into court record, that's fine. I accept that they are in the Regional Council record and have not been considered in the process of the PC7 justification section 32. The Section 32 omits explanation of the so-called focus group, clause 18. Focus group genesis, invitations, attendance, or how two water users were selected, and could in any way represent the majority of views and concerns of deemed permit holders and other water users. In short, the Section 32 report props itself up on three purported community consultations. All three were woefully inept, and neither individually nor collectively can they be considered to be bona fide or professional or honest attempts at community or deemed permit holder communication. Analysis of alternative options. Key points I wanted to say in there are that there were a variety of alternative options, not just the do nothing, which they call the status quo. Status quo would have included existing council proposals and actions. Clause 26, there was a time process that had some blessing from Professor Skelton of the work program that would have led to the implementation of the then 2017 MPSFM. Council has abandoned that process. Again, Madam Chair, I'm happy that there is a reference to that time program from Peter Constantine. If that's not admitted into record, I will respect that decision of court. It is in the records of the Regional Council. Duress. The ministerial recommendation that gave rise to PC7 being created placed the Otago Regional Councillors and staff under duress. That duress was, quite simply, one of fear of dismissal of councillors and ministerial appointment of commissioners. That duress was expressed by various councillors, staff and consultants at different occasions. The duress was clearly expressed by the chairperson, then chairperson, who formally speaking at the Manuiriki Reference Group in January 20 meeting, reported the Minister's recommendations explicitly, and explicitly she stated, "We must meet the recommendations or you know what will happen, and none of us want that." The duress was also expressed at the various interactions of Council held with water interests by stressing the time expediency, justifying minimal consultation to meet the Minister's specified date for interim plan notification. In short, councillors, their staff and consultants felt an overwhelming duress from the Minister's recommendation. The only test they applied conscientiously was a time test for notifying a plan change for short-term consenting. If any evidence to the contrary was considered, it would appear in the recommending report to the councillors to notify PC7. That does not appear. Rather, the time undertaken given to the Minister is emphasised. That recommending report has been placed before the court with my earlier evidence. Reliance on the Skelton report. As noted above, the Council relied on the Skelton report and subsequent one-page letter to the Minister to justify PC7. Over time, Professor Skelton's words of OSC's water planning being not fit for purpose seems to have been taken as sufficient justification for PC7. The phrase has never been analysed, just used as a thought capture. The deemed permits process, which is even the primary focus of PC7, must be seen in the context of 30 years forward warning to both the regulator and the regulated. The regulator willfully, repeatedly failed to take that forward warning. The regulator prepared for the change and did so in light of 2014 and 2017 MPSFM changes as they applied. PC7 suckers the regulator for its failures and is punitive on the regulated and other water interests. Your Honour, looking forward, though the OSC has agreed and announced it will fulfil several ministerial recommended timelines, it is very apparent to experienced independent professionals that those timelines will not be met. That is a further flaw to the objective of PC7. Getting a totally new land and water plan developed with responsible community engagement and resource knowledge by December 2023 is an enormous task and beyond achievements ever attained by any regional council in New Zealand. No councils have got the 2017 MPSFM fully operative. Progressive implementation plans abound with time horizons running to 2025 and beyond. Further obstacles are apparent. These include time the councils, iwi and communities need in coming to grips with how the 2020 MPSFM provisions of Te Mana o Te Wai can be developed and implemented. The government announcement that the RMA itself will be removed from the statute books in favour of two new statutes. And three, see a robust, honourable, efficient, reliable and lawful pathway to handle consent applications under any PC7 determination after 21 April this year. This must include how applications lodged and accepted before 1 April can be guaranteed continued regulator acceptance despite any time needed to revise the applications to suit the yet-to-be-determined PC7 provisions.
So what's the issue there? Can you say that, can you, without reading it, just say it again or put it differently? 1 April.
1 April yeah. was the timeline which applications had to be lodged if they were assured of continuity for as long as procrastination and regulation takes.
You mean what you're referring to is Section 124 of the Resource Management Act to allow that those applications continue after 1 October?
Indeed.
Right. Then you should say Section 124 of the Resource Management Act.
I would if I was a lawyer, Your Honour. I rely on memory that such sections exist.
Anyway, so that's what you're getting at there.
Yes.
And so then what's the second sentence about?
Well, if they're accepted, but then they have to be changed because of the outcome of PC7.
Yes, you're right. Also PC8 as well for primary sector. And I am aware of that and the burden that that puts on the community.
Yes, but the council hasn't acknowledged it's aware of it in the documents to date. That's the point I'm making. I accept that, but I only know that as of now.
Okay.
PC7 is now, time-wise at least, unfit for purpose. It is highly undesirable that any form of PC7 plan should be definitively in place before the known target date for the primary event is intended to control. For DEN permits, replacement, the target date has been known for 29 years and more and is prior to 1 April 2021. Planning by consents based on informed MPSFM consideration is preferable to ongoing plan and process chaos as is happening now because of PC7. The PC7 and associated subsequent policy and plan changes recommended by the Minister create an enormous future bow wave of consent processing that will simultaneously be dealing with the meaning and interpretation of a totally new regulatory regime. That is a repeat of the very issue Professor Skelton was called in to assess, the ORC resourcing, competence and environment to handle a lot of water consent renewals at a single time. Thank you, Your Honour.
Paragraph 41, first sentence. You got that before you?
Sorry?
Your paragraph 41.
Yep.
I'm just interested in you say it's highly undesirable any form of PC7 should definitively be in place before the known target date for the primary events. What are you getting at there, the known target date primary events? What do you mean?
My apologies, should be after.
So read that sentence out to me and I'll edit your record of evidence, yep.
It is highly undesirable that any form of PC7 plan should be definitively in place after the known target date for the primary events, or not established before that primary event.
And the primary event being?
The primary event being 1 April 2021 for the application, as you remind me, Section 124.
So are you saying that, still not sure I'm getting the gist of what you're saying here, are you saying that PC7 should not have been notified prior to 1 April or post 1 April?
I am trying to say that PC7 should have been determined prior to 1 April 2021.
Well, that would have made a lot of sense if that was.
And okay. Your Honour, that would have been Skelton's attention. But if you looked at it, and the council was told about it at the infamous forum and other forums, that the process and the degree of interest were such that that was extremely unlikely, even using this fast process of call-in. Now, Your Honour, the reasons for that And it comes back to the issue of the objectives and the rules that the PC7 proposed, is that a lot of pressure was on council not to roll over. The pressure was on council, and a lot of submissions from non-irrigator groups were to, understandably, not allow a direct continuation. Now, of course, from the irrigator, other water user viewpoint, the worry was being able to continue in a reasonable, effective way without having excessive multiple consent processing and keeping bankability. Now, PC7 as constructed, contrary to the expectation I think that Professor Skelton might have had, brought those things into a monumental clash that is taking a long time. That situation, that consideration, was not given by the Regional Council.
All right, thank you. I understand that. Mr. Moore, have you got any questions? All right, thank you. Have you got any questions?
No, I don't have any.
Okay, and you've had my questions, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, now Mrs. McCauley approached me after the lunch adjournment and asked whether the next submitter could also join her. They farm in partnership and are speaking about the same partnership. They've each prepared a statement, and I have no issue with both of them
sitting together
yep. and we'll work through that.
Okay, no, that's fine with me. So Ann McCauley and Mark Healy.
Mrs. McCauley, could you state your full name for the record, please?
Florence Ann McCauley.
And you're appearing here today as a representative of the Herney Road Partnership Limited?
Herney Road Partnership, yes, that's correct.
Oh, yes, well, there's no R in there. Bring it a little closer. And the Herney Road Partnership Limited filed a submission in relation to Plan Change 7?
Indeed.
And you have prepared a summary of the key points from that submission that you would like to highlight to the court today?
I would, thank you.
Do you confirm that the evidence that you are about to give is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
I do.
If you could now read your statement, and then we'll have Mr. Healy read his statement. But if you could proceed with your one first.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and thanks to the court for the time, the opportunity. I'm Anne McCauley, speaking on behalf of Laurie McCauley and myself. We own a 50-acre block in Lowburn, Central Otago, which is a third of the Heaney Road Partnership, and Mark is another partner. The irrigation water for our property comes out of the Lowburn from an historic water race established in 1863, 12-kilometre race that runs across the southern end on the eastern surface of the Pisa Range. We're proud to have maintained this historic race over 30 years by dint of hard work and a lot of money, and we intend to continue to maintain the race and enhance our small holding. Our submission referred to 10A, 2B, stroke 10A, 3, and I will slightly alter that in line with what has been happening over the last few weeks of hearings. We submit that to limit the area allowed to be irrigated to what was being irrigated in 2017 is short-sighted and stifles development. Now, obviously, that has evolved to include 2020, but I would still like to submit that 2017, 2020 are still dates. I think the philosophy should still be that we may be able to irrigate and bring in new land. We have a hill block that was flood irrigated in the past, but with new regulations is currently unable to be irrigated. Excuse me. It's a beautiful piece of land which is not now being used to its full potential. We have installed K-line over most of the farm, and we have plans to extend the area to be irrigated to include this hill block. With careful scheduling, we could do this without increasing our current water allocation, but with huge benefit to the block and to the property. And just in explanation, K-line is used to irrigate approximately 30 acres of the pasture, including the production of high-quality hay and a 10-acre block of vineyard, irrigated with 4 litres an hour compensating drippers. K-line is planned for the 10 acres of hill pasture, which I've talked about in the previous paragraph. These systems provide fully efficient irrigation with no runoff, hence no waste. As stated, we can increase the area within our current allocation, but it would reduce the full efficient use of our land if allocation were to be reduced. The low burn, which is our source of water, is not over-allocated, as you've heard from several other submitters over the last few days. But we are learning with concern that the consents are likely to be limited to 6 years. If we have to accept this term, may we respectfully submit that the renewal be a rollover unless there are conditions of concern that need to be addressed. We cannot go through the angst, the worry and the expense every 6 years if our system is working efficiently and there have been no adverse effects demonstrated. Our partnership has paid $10,000 for hydrological and ecological reports. That, by the way, is only a small part of the total expenses we have accrued. But this scientific data should be able to be available for any subsequent applications. Like most farmers, we care about the land we're on and see our role as enhancing the environment and the economic status, and thereby our area. We're not wasteful, and with respect, we feel that we, as the practical users, know this land, its soil, its climate, and its flora far better than the ORC could possibly expect to. Thank you, Your Honour.
Thank you. Now, I think you're going to ask any questions that you have for this witness.
I wasn't quite sure who the questions might best be addressed to,
I'm quite happy for you to address to me and then refer to
it. Okay, well, let's...
Whatever you wish.
Let's start with that. So, in relation to the property that you have described in your evidence this afternoon, you hold a water permit?
We do. It's a deemed permit, yes.
And we've heard today some evidence in relation to the priorities on the deemed permits in the Lowburn. Does your permit have a priority attaching to it?
It did, and it was a high priority for continuous use. But to be honest, we've been there 30 years in our time. We've all worked, as several others have said, constructively with one another. We've never actually had to invoke that priority.
And when you think about the area of land under irrigation, would you be able to show that area of land on a map if I handed to you a map of your
Absolutely.
Property?
Absolutely.
and you will have heard me asking about a precise, precise date range of September 2017 to March 2020, and you could shade in the area on the graph of irrigable land during that period of time.
It hasn't changed because we stopped our flood irrigating when we realised that this was coming up.
Thank you. Those were my only questions for you.
Thank you.
Do you have any questions? I just wanted to understand your last answer when you were asked about the irrigable land area over a certain time period. You said you stopped flood irrigating when this came up. I wasn't sure what you meant by that.
That was once we realised that, in fact, flood irrigating was to be discontinued, and in fact we did get the message that it was not to be allowed, and so we stopped flood irrigating our hill.
So when did you stop flood irrigating your hill? 2017.
Yes.
So
in fact, no, I'm sorry, we would have stopped that quite a bit earlier than that, and we were hoping to be able to flood irrigate, to change to K-line, because we've worked on changing our K-lines once it became apparent that this was the desirable thing to do. But we can't do it all at once. We couldn't afford to do it all at once.
Sure.
And now I've got to say we've run out of steam because we're in our 80s, and so we can't afford time, or we haven't got the time or the energy. Or the money at the moment.
No,
but we're working on this for future, for our family.
Right. So I was just trying to understand within the time frame that the Regional Council had set for identifying the area that had been irrigating, would that have taken in your hill block? Perhaps Mr. Moore could just remind me of the dates.
September 2017 to March 2020, I think.
So if we go back to September 2017, irrigating your hill block then?
We had stopped earlier than that for various reasons. But the main thing was that, in fact, this the actual reference to that clause in the Plan Change 7 was that, in fact, any land was not able to be added after 27. There was no area allowed to be added after 2017. Now, I understand that that has evolved.
Yes, the dates changed slightly.
2020.
But it doesn't change your situation, is it?
Well, no. But, in fact, now we would like to be able to do that irrigation, and that would include, that would, in fact, mean that we are adding to the land we weren't irrigating in 2017, if I'm making sense.
That's fine. I understand what it is that you would like to do, but I was just trying to be clear as to whether this was an issue or whether the change in the dates might have in some way have helped. So anyway, thank you for clarifying
that. That's all right.
Perhaps. Can you give me that provision again?
I'm looking in the controlled activity rule 10A 3.1, Roman 4.
Roman 4.
No, sorry, Roman 3.
Yep, that's it.
Okay, so I understand your evidence to be, and do correct me if I'm wrong, because this could be really important for you, but you may have ceased wild flooding prior to 1 September 2017 for a range of reasons. Mm-hmm. Is that your evidence?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. This is just more by way of observation. I take your point that scientific data must be available for subsequent applications, and I understand the point that you're making, and I've reflected back on other applicants. Nothing's lost in terms of the process. It's not to indicate an outcome, but nothing's lost. Mm-hmm. And that data is equally available or maybe equally put to additional use, so aside from the application, additional use in the land and water plan, given that that's what the regional councils say they're short of and that's what you're rich in. So that may be a way to front foot the plan and yes. to have an effective voice or you know, or to influence that by, you know, because you've got that information.
Yeah, I would comment that, in fact, I think, and it's been reflected by several speakers, it is the uncertainty. It's the we've got the Resource Management Act is obviously going to be reformed, changed, goodness knows when, where, how. There's the Land and Water Plan coming up. There's Plan Change 7. They've all added just layer after layer of uncertainty. And also, may I say, we haven't always had the best consultation between the regulator and the regulated, as we've been has been spoken about. And it leaves you with a real sense of powerlessness, I think. Frustration and powerlessness.
And a lot of people talk about that lack of agency or control over their own futures.
Absolutely, yes.
And how disempowering that feels. It is. And it's an awful feeling.
It is. And we're small, but we're still important.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. And you also have something that the Regional Council needs, which is information. And
absolutely.
So there is that opportunity to influence the process going forward.
Yes, exactly. If we heard, and I think this would go for so many, there's so much expertise out there that's practical, and if it were heard and able to be heard. I mean, we all want the same outcome, good use of the land, good environmental control, but we want it on a fair basis.
And I suspect that's the region's goals as well, although it may not seem like that at times.
Not at the moment.
But everybody has the same you know, the same end point that you're all working towards. There's more that unites than divides, although it may not feel like that now.
No, there are moments when it doesn't.
I know that. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. So, Mr. Healy.
Yes, Mr. Healy, can you state your full name for the record, please?
Mark Edwin Healy.
And you are farming under the umbrella group of the Heaney Road Partnership Limited?
That's correct.
And I see your name on the submission as the representative for that partnership.
Yes.
You have also prepared a summary of the key points that you wish to raise with the court today?
That's correct.
And do you confirm that the evidence, including your summary that you're about to give, is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Yes, I confirm that.
If you could now proceed with reading your summary and then if you could remain for any questions.
Thank you. I, Mark Healy, registered engineering associate, along with my family, farm 29 hectares at Lowburn. Our property uses irrigation water from the same race as Anne and Laurie McCauley, and we are also members of Heaney Road Partnership. To give you an insight into my background in irrigation, in the early 1970s as a Ministry of Works engineering officer, over a period of 15 months, I walked, mapped and reported on every structure on every Ministry of Works irrigation race in Central Otago. It's about 950 miles of water races. Prior to that, I was involved in detailed design of lower attack irrigation scheme and investigations and preliminary design, including community liaison, for several other smaller irrigation proposals. I was also later, as of by then, senior engineering officer with Ministry of Works, responsible for all aspects of the Lowburn Burn Cottage irrigation scheme, from concept through to completion. Ironically, I actually ended up being a user of it. After leaving Ministry of Works and Development, I then spent 32 years as a South Island area engineer for a pumping company until retirement in July 2019. I'm a specialist in low flow, high head, solar powered stock water pumping systems using tracking arrays. I'd share Anne and Laurie's sense of pride in maintaining a historic settlers' race as our sole source of irrigation water. My primary objection to ORC's proposed Plan Change 7 is the limiting of any term of consent to 6 years. Upon the expiry of any such consent, I'm led to believe that we will then have to go through the whole stressful and expensive process again. Previous consents I have been involved with have been granted for 25-year terms, which is far more reasonable. Otago Regional Council already have plenty of avenues of redress should they feel water is being improperly used or wasted at any time. So I can't accept that this is a valid reason for limiting the term of a consent. As with others, we're mindful of the need to use water wisely, and using modern technology, there's already been a very noticeable change in methods of irrigation throughout central Otago in the last 30 years. We also share the view held by others that the proposal included in Plan Change 7 to limit future irrigation to those areas which were being watered in any given year. This is not only errant stupidity, but a clear breach of our rights as legal owners of the land. In our specific case, our family has invested around $500,000 in developing a commercial cherry orchard on what was previously a non-irrigated area of our farm. Are we supposed to sit back and let 5,000 young trees simply dry up and wither away? This particular aspect of the proposed plan change is an insult to the intelligence of all affected water users. In conclusion, Heaney Road Partnership has taken what was simply a grazing area in 1990 and transformed it into three highly productive small holdings, which are both visually attractive and provide employment and enjoyment to our families and friends. Our irrigation race and water rights have been the key to this success. Thank you.
I do thank you. I suspect you're one of the very few people who have had the benefit of walking the 950 miles of irrigation infrastructure.
Yes.
It must have been quite some journey.
It was, and 950 miles back to get the truck.
Well, yes. Yes, this is true. I'm interested in the cherry orchard that has been planted on the property that you're farming.
Yes.
And you've talked about the development there. When was the cherry orchard planted?
First plantings were 2018, I think, land preparation, and it's only just been completed this last season, last summer.
And had you put the irrigation main lines in at the beginning of that development sequence?
We did them as part of the development, that's correct.
So, yep.
Prior to that, the property was covered by a combination of water races and a pond which then supplied K-line irrigation.
I see. So the cherry orchard is in an area of the property that was already under irrigation?
No, because of its topography, no, it wasn't. Yeah.
Right. So I want to just make sure I've really understood the dates here. They're important.
Yes.
So the development sequence for the cherry orchard, and let's look. What area are we looking at here for the 5,000 trees?
4 hectares, I think, from memory. Yeah.
And the 4 hectares has been sequentially planted between 2018 and 2021?
Correct.
And in terms of that development, the cherry trees are irrigated?
Yes.
By dripper?
Dripper, yes.
And
it's on a very steep slope, and for reasons for frost protection, and the drippers are all self-compensating.
So the irrigation system that is supplying water to those drippers, can you describe to me the connectivity? You mentioned a pond. Have you got a pond on the property?
Yep. When we decided to go ahead with the cherry block, the water comes in onto the pretty much the highest point of our property, and very fortunately we have sufficient head to be able to run all of our irrigation by setting up two tanks right where the water came into the property, and use those as header tanks, so we don't need any pumping or anything like that. And there's a complete standalone system for the cherries, and a separate standalone system for the K-line irrigation.
So let's stay with the cherries for now.
Yes.
Would you describe the irrigation, or how would you describe the irrigation infrastructure relating to the cherries, and in particular, what would you describe as being the irrigation mainline with respect to the infrastructure for the cherries?
Okay.
Are you photographing me? You really should, because... because okay. Otherwise security will get you, so... Right.
Okay,
this
continue.
Is actually really important. It's the question of stranded assets.
Yes, it is.
I understand that.
Okay. The water enters the property pretty much in an open race at pretty much the highest point in elevation. And then we have a quite small sort of scale head pond, which is just basically through to the silt, stuff like that. And we're just about to construct, we're about to install a control weir at that point. Mm-hmm. That hopefully gives us cleanish water into the tanks, and from the bottom of those tanks this buried main line goes across to down into the bottom of a valley where there's a self-cleaning type filter arrangement all completely automated and time clock and everything, and then back up the other side of the valley to the head of the cherry block, and then it's split into five zones in terms of the elevation down the cherry block, and each of those zones is then on a timer. So it's the idea is it's hopefully going to be completely automated.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah. The mainline irrigation pipes that you described is going down from the header tank across
yep.
and back up to the cherry block, if I can use those
correct.
Terms.
Yes.
When were those pipes installed?
We put them in probably 2017 to 18, maybe? Yeah. It was pretty much the first thing we did, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's fine in terms of the yes. thinking on the stranded yes. assets. They won't be stranded, even
yes.
if they're not planted out yet. Okay. All right. Yeah, understand that. The comment that you've made in the evidence, which is really what Mr. Moore is exploring, is, you know, having noted that you'd spent $500,000 developing that cherry orchard,
yes.
are you supposed to sit back and just let 5,000 trees simply die and wither away?
Yep.
And that's a fair enough comment, but the way that the plan now is tracking is that, no, you should not wait for your plants to wither and die. If you've got the main line in, even
mm-hmm.
if you haven't planted out...
Mm-hmm.
A new provision is that you are able to increase the irrigation
yes.
area to that extent. Yeah. So
we've
tried to identify mm-hmm. what we can do about stranded assets, because mm-hmm. you're not the only one who's invested a considerable
yeah.
sum of money, and then do
yeah.
something about that if we can.
I understand.
Yeah.
I could make the comment that I wrote this.
Oh yeah.
I wrote this before. When I thought it was the 2017 thing.
Yeah.
And it was only really last night that Anne told me, no, that's all gone. So,
yeah, it's not
so
even...
So I'm sorry.
There's two things. There's two responses. Firstly,
yeah.
a move out to 2020, and then secondly, a response in terms of people who have invested huge sums of money
yes.
in irrigation what does that look like?
Yes.
And the recommendation is it looks like a mainline. Now, that picks up on many horticulturists
right.
who've yet to plant out.
Yes.
But they've got the infrastructure in the ground. It might also look like a centre pivot, which
yes.
is why we which is why we said it should be an RD rule. But
okay.
anyway, so,
understand.
You know, so
yep.
it's got the both ends of the spectrum there.
Yep. yep.
Okay.
Okay.
All
Thank
right.
you.
So there's a response for your situation.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
7. Yeah.
Good.
Thank you. Understanding the precise details about what has actually occurred on the ground is really helpful for making sure that the plan does properly respond to the situation to ensure that in this situation the trees yet to be planted aren't left stranded.
Right. Thank you.
I'll just touch briefly on the water permit. We've heard some evidence today in relation to the priorities in the Lowburn
yes.
and that those priorities are simply not being exercised because there's sufficient water to go around.
Right.
Has that been your experience?
Could I thank you? You don't mind take the opportunity because this mm. came up this morning with June Davis about
oh, yeah.
the Lowburn.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we were, Anne and I, the other party,
mm-hmm.
we were the people who made the decision mm-hmm. in 1990. At that stage, we were running the borough race. We were
oh, right.
using
mm-hmm.
water out of the Lowburn.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from my irrigation experience, I worked extensively with slope stability on the Clyde
mm-hmm.
Dam.
Mm-hmm.
The water race, unbelievably, at the point of intake,
mm-hmm.
dropped vertically about a metre in a landslide
mm-hmm.
over 800 or 900 metres
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
in very, very
mm-hmm.
steep country.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of thought, as an engineer, it would be totally irresponsible mm. to get stuck in there with bulldozers and try and fix it and mm. anything like that.
Mm.
So I applied to regional council
mm-hmm.
after consultation with the others and said, look, there are three smaller tributaries of the Lowburn
mm.
immediately downstream.
Mm.
We can probably, it's way less water, but if we're careful, we can probably survive using those.
Mm.
So I said, can we take those three streams into
mm-hmm.
our water race,
mm-hmm.
and in the meantime we'll put the Lowburn on hold
mm-hmm.
till see if things settle down,
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been maintaining on those. Now we looked at it again, I guess as part of our investigation
mm-hmm.
for our consent.
Mm-hmm.
We're probably looking, I mean, engineering-wise, anything's possible.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's like, oh, my guess would be a couple of hundred thousand.
At a price, yes.
Yeah, mm. and still environmentally, it's going to be this massive scar on the mm. hill and everything. And I thought, look, we'll just live with what we've got.
Yeah.
And so it's been interesting listening to other people who are sort of in a situation where they're taking some water out of creeks and things.
Mm.
We're just surviving on what we get out of these three little creeks.
Mm.
And it's ideally, we're trying to get 25 litres a second between the three of us.
Mm.
So about sort of roughly 8 each.
Mm.
And we've managed okay.
Mm.
We self-imposed limitations ourselves. If say, that drops down to 15 litres a second or whatever, we just, okay, well, hey, in one case, we just just took turnabout.
Mm-hmm.
Week on, week off, stuff like that. So we manage our own thing.
Yeah.
And this is why there's lots of water left in the Lowburn,
mm-hmm.
because, of course, we're not touching it.
Mm.
As Anne said, we did have priority,
mm.
but that priority was never ever an issue in terms of there was always plenty going past.
Mm.
Yeah. But on a mountain water race, ma'am, there's leakage of probably 20 to 30%
mm.
of any given. I mean, your intake is getting a shovel and shoveling some gravel in, and you look downstream a couple of hundred metres or something. Didn't get much of that, did I?
Mm, okay.
So that's the sort of situation. There's always residual flows and things like that have never really been a concern because we know that we can't effectively stop it anyway.
Yep.
Yeah. Does that help? Or
mm-hmm.
sorry. Yeah.
No, it is. It's helpful. Thank you. No further questions.
All right. Thank you. Any questions?
Okay.
Oh, I don't. Thank you. That was very helpful.
Just one thing you
You vaguely mentioned frostfighting.
Yes.
Can you just talk a bit about the water for that?
The hope is by having it on a south-facing slope down leading into a valley, that the natural flow of air will be similar, like the Cromwell Gorge was always supposed to be frost-free before Lake Dunstan. Mm-hmm. And just by the sheer air mass movement, and we're kind of hoping to replicate the same thing without having to frostfight. We're not intending at this stage to do anything like sprinkler frostfighting or anything like that.
But do you have a backup plan in case you need to?
Sorry?
Do you have a backup plan in case you need to?
No, sorry.
Okay.
We're hoping, in fact, if I may answer as part of that, because Mark's slope is to the south, ours is to the north, and we come into this communal valley. Mm. We have a wind machine. We don't use water for our vineyard. Mm. It's a wind machine. Mm-hmm. And so he's hoping that, in fact, our wind machine
yep.
will do both. Blow
the wind over there.
Yes. Okay.
That's good. Thank you.
Okay, hope that helps.
Thank you very much. Again, okay. It's been extremely helpful evidence. Thank you.
Okay, next up is the submitter in the name of Matakanui Station. I'm not sure who might be appearing. Here we go. We shall find out. Now, Mr. Patterson, is it?
Yep. Yes.
Very good. If you could state your full name for the record, please.
Andrew Aaron Patterson, and I am representing Matakanui Station and the Patterson family, my wife, myself, and our three kids, Kira, James, and Neve Patterson.
Thank you. And Matakanui Station Limited has filed a submission on Plan Change 7. Dated 4 May 2020?
Yes.
And you have also prepared a summary of the key points that you wish to raise with respect to your submission, and a copy of those key points has been circulated?
Yes.
Do you confirm that the evidence that you're about to give is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
I do.
Now, perhaps if you could take the court through the summary of the key points and then remain for any questions.
Yep. Thank you, Your Honour, for listening, giving me this opportunity to speak on behalf of our family. I've listened to a lot of the submitters over the day, and a lot of what I hear is frustration over the situation and this plan change. I've found it very hard and quite emotional to deal with this plan change. It has put our, I wouldn't say farming business in jeopardy, but it is going to make it very hard for our farming business going forward with a short-term consent. Our family has a proud history of farming in Central Otago, and we've used water for a long time. Our family came to Central Otago in the late 1800s, and we've been farming at Matakanui for the last three generations, since 1958. We've been irrigating there the whole time. And my grandfather, before that, was involved in setting up the Maniatota Irrigation Scheme. He died before it was completed. In 2004, I took over management of Matakanui and started thinking about the process of upgrading our irrigation infrastructure. I had been attending all of the water forums that were held by ORC. In fact, one of them was in this very room. I went to the very first ones that were held in Alexandria, and I remember the day that we were there, it was 35 degree heat with a gale force nor'wester, and at that time they estimated that the water loss that day was 9 millimetres, and we were only able to put on 5. So our land was going backwards that day. Water is absolutely crucial in our farming operation. It is a large farming operation, but we have a very small area that is irrigated in comparison. So about 6% of the total land area is irrigated. We have a lot more land that could be irrigated. And I would like to be able to irrigate more as well. We have been able to irrigate more, as you'll see in the current use. We have, as we have upgraded our irrigation infrastructure, we have been able to irrigate up to 4 times the area that we previously irrigated with it. That's just through the irrigation efficiencies, which ORC has pushed us. And initially it was a push, and then after a while, the farming community and Omakara and Central Otago embraced it and had then embarked on a massive change in our area, including ourselves. We started to put in pipelines and then pivots. We started with gun irrigation to start with, spray, and then we moved to pivots. The first pivots that we put in were in 2015. And at great expense, my wife and I had just taken over the family farm. We had bought my brother and my father out and my sister out. And so we had a high level of debt. First year we went into farming, we wound up in a drought. We had very little water. Our flood irrigation, contour irrigation at the time, did not provide us with much to go on. So it was a real struggle. We managed to survive that, but the decision was made that if we didn't spend money on upgrading the irrigation infrastructure and making our farming business more secure, that we potentially would be out the window after the next, essentially, drought. So we embarked on a substantial irrigation upgrade. And we have now got 200 hectares under pivot irrigation, and we have over 200 hectares under gun irrigation. And we still have approximately 40 hectares of border dike and 10 hectares of wild flood or contour irrigation. We reuse the water in that scenario, so the flood irrigation then goes into the water dike after going through a dam. The problem with the border dike irrigation is that it's on very gravelly type soil, and so unless you have a high flow, what happens is it just starts to disappear, so it becomes a very inefficient irrigation system. When it was installed in the early 70s, it was state-of-the-art, supposedly, at the time, but now it has been deemed as essentially an environmental risk. When plan change, or not that long ago, we had a meeting with our bank manager, and that was that area of the border diking and wild flood was the last of our upgrade of our irrigation project, except for the dam, the storage dam that we wanted to build. And that irrigation project was estimated to cost, the actual infrastructure, just the pipes and the pivots, was going to cost $650,000, and then the fencing and the development of the land and the upgrade of putting another pond in and was going to be over $1 million. We went to the bank and said, can we do this? We told them, we said, we know that there is potential environmental issues with the current irrigation scheme. And they turned around to us and said, sorry, plan change 7, short-term consents, potential 6-year consents, we will not lend you the money because it'll be a 25-year loan and we cannot, you cannot, we cannot lend on that. I asked the we also at the other time on our that was on a community scheme which is called the County Race, which is run and operated by the Armacare Irrigation Company. We then said to them, well, can we then borrow some money to build the storage dam, which was at $1.2 million. That was for our own private water right to make it much more secure. So at the moment it currently runs, it's just the run of the creek with a small storage dam at the head of it to act as a essentially a coffer. And so they said no to that as well for the same reason. I said your deemed permit consent is only potentially under Plan Change 7, it will only be 6 years, so you won't, you can't borrow that money to do that. So they said you can do it out of cash flow. So we had one other small project that we could do, and we did it out of cash flow. And then coronavirus came along, and we had to borrow the money anyway. So I asked the bank manager to come and give evidence with me, and he was not allowed by his bank. I asked him yesterday whether I could state his name. He said I could, but I won't. I can tell you the bank, though, it's Rabobank, so they are an agricultural rural bank. So lots of people have said to you that it is unbankable. I have the evidence that it is. It is very frustrating that we are in this situation. We have been monitoring the water in the Chatter Creek catchment because virtually all of Matakanui Station is within the Chatter Creek catchment other than the headwaters of the Thompsons. And we've been monitoring the water quality of our creek and we've just recently done some macroinvertebrate studying and all of the creeks that are 100% within Matakanui Station and including the Chatter Creek, which is also fed by a couple of other, through a few other farms, are all really good scores. So when you look at the SQ MCI index scores, they are all 6 and above, which means excellent water quality. So we are actually really proud of the water quality coming from Matakanui. We aim to maintain or improve that. We've fenced, just recently finished fencing off a 6-hectare wetland. And we have a program set up in our farm plan to fence off a whole lot of wetlands at the bottom of each of our creeks and areas that drain into the Chatter Creek. So going forward, we are aiming to maintain and improve the water quality. There's lots of eels in our creek, and our kids have even named one of them. You can actually see the eel swimming in the creek from the bridge that crosses just above our house in the Chatter Creek. A lady just recently was buying rams, or her husband was buying rams, and she was bored of the process, and so she walked down the road about 500 metres and crossed the bridge, and she came back really excited, and she said, did you know you've got eels in your creek? And I said, yes. She said, I've just seen one of them swimming under the bridge. I think that's pretty cool. And we take real pride in looking after that water. So where I'm going with that is we've upgraded our irrigation infrastructure, and I believe that future upgrades, if we can do it with a longer-term consent, we will be able to maintain and improve that water quality. Flood irrigation is well known for putting water back into the creeks, but it is also well known for taking nutrient and E. coli off. And we have shown that with our water testing. So we have identified areas that are an issue, and we have worked to rectify it. We identified, when our initial start, we identified that the farmstead was an issue. So we've put some ponds and areas that catch anything that runs off through sheepyards and the farmstead area to make sure that none of that reaches the waterway. So we are pretty keen on maintaining the water quality. With our water consent and our deemed permit that we have a residual flow on the water consent, and that was done when we shifted one of the water consents up to gain gravity. So that was important in maintaining the connectivity of the water in the Ned's Creek. So where I'm going with all that is this. I'm finding it very frustrating, and I know from listening to all the people today is that we take real pride in our farm and our water and what we've done with our land. And we just want a consent that allows us to continue working and looking after it. And the 6-year consent, in my opinion, does not allow that. It doesn't allow it for our future as well, for our families, for our farming families. And many people have mentioned about the costs, and I think it's been missed a little bit that we've spent a lot of money already so far just to get the consent without worrying about Plan Change 7. In 6 years' time, we will have to do it again. And because ORC is so disorganised and have failed on so many instances, that we will have to spend a lot of money again to be able to try and make up for the inadequacy. They have already stated that they do not wish to collect any more data on anything, so it'll be up to the farmers to continue to do that, whether it be water quality information, biodiversity, or water use data, or actual water quantity data in the creeks. It'll be all provided by the farmers. So all of that keeps coming at a cost. We will still have to employ the scientists, because by the time we get to 6 years' time, the goalposts will have shifted again. I know I haven't spoken directly to my points, but my wife wanted me to speak from the heart. It's not that much fun at the moment being a farmer. I don't know whether you realise, but there's been quite a generational change in our valley, and there's a lot of young, and I still consider myself young, but there's a lot of young farmers in our valley that are under a lot of pressure, because no matter which way you look, we are being attacked. And by attacked, I mean there are so many different regulations and changes in the way we are being controlled, I guess. And I've even got friends that are dairy farmers. They don't like letting anyone know when they go to a function or anything that they are actually farmers. And I mean, I think that's pretty sad when we got to that point. But anyway, this is one of those things that I feel My understanding of the original idea for Plan Change 7 was the fact that Professor Skelton, and I actually was one of the guys that was interviewed by him, and we told him that the farmers were ready, and he reported back that the farmers weren't ready, but it was actually the OSC that wasn't ready for us. We have all submitted our water consents on time as per the requirements, and it is very disappointing to be in this position now that we can't move forward with long-term consents. The rollover one sounded nice to start with, but then when we saw all of the fish hooks, all the catches, the potential loss of water, and then we now hear that some groups are willing to allow potential water degradation. I think that's criminal, to be honest. So I don't, I view that we should, that the Plan Change 7 should be wholly withdrawn. I don't see why, under the current water plan and the water consents, that there can't be a review clause installed in within the consents, and it be allowed that that could be reviewed and looked at in the future based on the changes in the water plan. And then that would allow for iwi and Te Mana Otiwai and all of the other parts of the MPS to be brought into the water plan and then it be reviewed in time. That's what I have to say.
Thank you. Mr. Moore?
I'm interested in the sources of water for your farming property, and my recollection is you have a mixture of sources, a private water permit, and are you also a shareholder in an irrigation scheme?
Yes, I'm a shareholder and a director in the Omakau Area Irrigation Company. We have water coming from main race supply, which comes from Falls Dam, and we also have water that comes from Middle Creek or Buster Creek, and it is part of the county scheme, and we also have our own private water, which is a deemed permit and a water permit, and that's on the Ned's Creek.
Let's start with the Ned's Creek and the deemed permit there. Does that deemed permit have any priorities associated with it?
There is priorities on the Chatter Creek. There is one. And in the water consent application that we put in the catchment plan was that one permit that had priority over all others, which had, I must add, has never been exercised. It's never been used. So we've operated as if there isn't any, but it's never been exercised. But that consent is to be surrendered, and that water that was taken by that consent was to be used towards the minimum flow, or the residual flow on the bottom of Chatter Creek. We had the catchment had found a way that water, which was currently taken by the Manuhirakia Irrigation Society, was able to be got from elsewhere.
Okay, so no actual exercising of the priorities in relation to the take from Ned's Creek. So
no.
Thinking about the source of water from the each of the two irrigation schemes, so the county scheme, thinking about that one first. In your the best of your knowledge, are you aware of whether the water taken by that scheme is the subject of priorities on some of these deemed permits?
No, so as I said, because that's all within that one catchment, the only priority was the one at the bottom, which, as I said, is being surrendered. Well, that was the plan. Whether that happens now, if the consents are just rolled over, that may change. But the idea was with the whole community, whole catchment plan was that each of the creeks would have a minimum or residual flow and a minimum flow on it, which they do not have at the moment. And that was how we were going to ensure that there was the water there at that point.
So that that applies to the first of the schemes, the Omakau scheme supply as well. It's all part of the same
catchment. Yes.
Yes. Okay. No, I understand that. I wonder whether you might also help me with respect to the irrigation development that's taken place on your farm, and you've described there the 200 hectares of pivot. 200 under hard hose guns and the remaining 50 border dike contour.
Yep.
The transition across to the pivots, that occurred back in 2015?
Yeah, 2015, yes.
And that's
well, it was completed in 2015, but the guns had been in process for some time before that. So, as I said, the first... And I got myself in a lot of trouble when I did this, so I bought some pipe on Trade Me, unbeknown to my father, and I hid it in a paddock and then started putting it in. I nearly fell out with the family completely, but my determination was to start the upgrade. And, yeah, that was the start. That was in 2005 that we started that.
Right. So when you think about the area of land that you currently have under irrigation, that would correlate with the area under irrigation between September 2017 and March 2020?
Yes.
And you could shade that area for me on a map?
Yes.
Thank you.
Just like to state that the area of irrigation on Matakanui is actually far smaller than it ever used to be. So going back to the early 1900s, they actually used to irrigate during the winter. So there is water races covering the whole of the flat of Matakanui Station. There is about, I've calculated it out, there is about 1,800 acres that was irrigated through the winter, and so the idea with that was they irrigated, they floated out, it froze and it filled up the water system and filled up the land with water, and in the spring and as it went into the summer it dried out and it allowed the grass growth.
Okay, thank you. No further questions.
Thank you. Do you have any questions? And neither do I. So thank you very much for your evidence. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take the afternoon adjournment.
All rise.